It's a Wednesday, straight up at 8 o'clock, and welcome to the Mornings with Ed Show. Delighted to have you as part of the program this morning. As you know, each and every Wednesday, we get the opportunity to speak with Laureen Gilbert. Laureen is the award-winning president and CEO of Wealthwise Financial Services, and this is our Wealthwise moment. Good morning, Laureen. Welcome in.
Good morning, Ed. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. Thank you for coming in. Just a wide variety of stuff that we'll be covering this morning, and I do appreciate your time with us, as always. How have you been, by the way?
Been great.
Okay.
Been great.
Good.
Yep, all is well.
Good, good. Better than I can say for the market in the last few days. Now, just me noticing, the market's been down the last several days, and we are right in the middle of earnings season. What does this mean for us?
Well, we've had such a run-up since the beginning of the year. If you look at the S&P 500, up 10%. So no surprise that we've seen a little bit of a pullback. That's very natural and normal for the markets to take a breather. Now, what's interesting is, yes, it's happening right at the beginning of our earnings season, and the expectations for this earnings season are tremendous. We expect over 70% of the S&P 500 to beat their earnings estimates. And not only that, we expect top-line revenue to also be a surprise to the upside. But what we've seen in companies like yesterday with Netflix reporting, and they actually missed their estimates, when we see something like that, that makes the markets nervous. And I think what we're also seeing is that there's the expectation that we're going to have guidance from these companies, whereas in prior quarters, with the pandemic, they were always pushing out and saying, we can't really give guidance. There's too much uncertainty. You're not hearing that now. You're hearing from corporations that they are giving guidance. But what makes the markets nervous, they have to listen carefully to what that guidance is to reframe future growth prospects as far as how much companies will grow. I would say we are still very bullish about this market, and that the past 3 days are, you know, a little bit of a breather, but that overall we have high expectations still for the markets for the rest of the year.
Okay. And just touching really quickly on Netflix specifically. Now, obviously competition has eaten into demand for them, but they're arguing that the problem is simply just a lack of new content. Is it competition eating into their demand?
Well, I think, you know, hey, Netflix is a great company. They've done a great job with growing their subscriber base, and now they're talking about trying to tighten up. You have subscribers that are using, you know, sharing it with friends and family, and so they're going to try and tighten that up to where they can increase their subscriber base even more. Competition is real. You have Disney Plus that has done a great job on their subscribers, and so, you know, that will, for any company that was early on, Netflix was early on in the streaming process, there's going to be increased competition from other sources. So they've got to continue to prove themselves. Now, what happened with companies like Netflix, they were a stay-at-home trade, so stock prices went up for those kinds of companies. But just like, you know, you saw what happened with the stock Peloton, right? And then now, you know, now they're retreating as well. So what I would say to investors is we've had a shift in the market from the stay-at-home trade to the reopening trade for those companies that we think will do well as the economy reopens. And I think that's what you're going to continue to see.
Okay. And also, as the economy reopens, what we've seen in the last year is consumers around the world having amassed an extra $5.4 trillion in savings since the pandemic began. And here in the United States, we've boasted the largest share of excess savings at about $2.6 trillion, or 12% of U.S. GDP. I may have asked you this question in a different form before, but how much savings is too much, and what percentage of income should be saved? Is there a rule of thumb?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I have to say it depends, right? So it depends on a lot of things. First of all, where are you in your stage of life? Are you retired or are you working? And, you know, when you're working, you have that ongoing stream of income. When you're retired, it's a different, usually a different kind of stream of income. The other thing is, what kind of job do you have? Do you work for the government, which is, in a sense, a more secure job, or are you an entrepreneur where you're very dependent upon going out and getting business? So I think a lot of these things, and I think what happened in the pandemic is that people realized in the United States how vulnerable we all were to an outside incident out of our control that impacted most people's income and their livelihood, right? So with that, I think it's normal that you would see an increase in what people are holding in their bank accounts. But I also think when it comes to thinking about where that money is, that money that you're setting aside, which I would say is usually 3 to 6 months worth of income that you want to set aside for emergency type of situations, think about where does that money need to be. Now, in a savings account, you don't have any kind of volatility or risk of principal as long as you're within, you know, FDIC limits. So you have that protection, as it were, there. However, you know, I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I was on the phone with one of our clients who is in a transition, probably is not buying her next home for another year or two. So with probably a year or two and having all of this money, you know, a couple hundred thousand that she wants to have for that down payment for the next home, what does she do with that money? Does it really make sense to put all of that in a savings account? Probably not. You're probably not going to earn much money there. In her case, we talked to her about using municipal bonds, and you and I have had this conversation about municipal bonds, because when you look at, you know, you savings, you have savings accounts, you have treasuries, treasury bills, and then you have municipals, it's on the more conservative side. So as long as you have a little bit of time and can withstand a little bit of short-term volatility, because you certainly can have volatility even in municipal bonds, you know, that may be a better place for some of that money that you're putting aside. So it, once again, I would say it depends a little bit, but certainly that rule of thumb, 3 to 6 months is a good rule of thumb. And then from there, where do you put that money? Some of it in savings, maybe other money in other kinds of more conservative instruments.
Always clarity. Thank you for that. And you mentioned bonds. Where are treasury bonds going?
Well, we've certainly seen an increase in treasury bond yields, and then most recently, a little bit of pullback from there. And so our expectation is for the Fed to not have any rate increases for quite a while. I mean, they're saying 2023. So, you know, we'll see where that goes. In the earliest, it would be 2022. But what we've seen happen, even without the Fed having any increase in their rates, we've seen treasuries start to go up. We do expect treasuries to end up over 2% within the next year, but it's, you know, you never know exactly when. There isn't a straight line. It's going to be moving around a little bit. We saw it go up to like 1.7 and, you know, down now to 1.56. So the trend is definitely the upward movement, but with some retreats expected in between, just okay, like what we see in the market, right? The markets will go up and then they retreat a little bit before they go up again.
Exactly. All right. I want to go overseas and talk about our relationship with China for a second. Yesterday, Xi Jinping warned against economic decoupling. He called for greater global economic integration. And he also took a thinly veiled shot at America's effort to reduce its dependence on Chinese exports like computer chips and stuff like that. My question is, how fine is the line that we have to walk or that we should walk with China economically?
Well, it is, in a sense, a symbiotic relationship, and we can't ignore that fact that there is dependency, in a sense, on both sides. But let's be clear that China's goal is world dominance. Right. That is their goal. They, you know, and they have a strategy for that. So we cannot forget that they are our biggest competitor, in a sense, really our biggest threat, economically,
right,
that is.
Right.
So from an economic standpoint, they are our biggest threat, and we need to take that very seriously, and we need to see what we can do to maintain our competitive edge. What I'll throw in here is that China is ahead of us on digital currencies. And they, you know, they're talking about that they're doing this for internal uses. But the reality is they're doing this for a global purpose.
Right.
And so I do believe what we're going to hear, we've heard, you know, what we've heard Yellen talk about is wanting to crack down on, you know, cryptocurrency. And we've heard the IRS say they want to crack down on any taxes that need to be paid. In addition to that, I do think we'll hear the Federal Reserve, the Treasury Department start talking about looking into a digital currency at some point.
Okay. And how, in the meantime, how do we get them to play fair?
Well, it's holding them to the rules that we already have, the agreements that we already have, that they do not comply with. So even the trade agreement that we have, they haven't fulfilled that. Now they're, you know, going to use the pandemic as an excuse, but there are lots of agreements we have, and clamping down on intellectual property. It's a big one right there. So there's a lot of things that can be done to enforce the rules that will keep us competitive and keep them, even on climate issues, Ed. You know, they are, you know, they're the worst culprit when it comes to emissions. So, you know, holding these countries to what they need to do globally.
So they're not, economically across the world, they're not too big to punish at this point?
Well, I think, like you said, I think we have to have a fine line between us and China, and that takes diplomacy, and it takes enforcement of the rules. But I think that, like I said, you know, what I said before the election was, no matter who won the election, the presidential election, we are on a long-term path of being tougher on China. So I don't see that stopping, because we need to be tough on China. And that's really, the shift happened in the last administration, but it's going to continue.
Okay. Thank you for that. Yesterday, more than 140 racial justice leaders published an open letter in the Financial Times urging asset managers to match their pledges on social and political issues with their votes at coming shareholder meetings. They were talking about votes on board diversity, racial equity, political spending disclosures. Is this something that's going to be moving forward with a lot of speed?
So I think here we've seen another shift. We've seen this shift. Just yesterday I was on the phone listening to Larry Fink of BlackRock and Bill Gates talking about corporate responsibility when it comes to sustainability and issues around whether it's climate or some of these other social issues. And so we definitely had a shift on businesses getting involved in politics. And so a couple things here. One, you have the younger generations who want to see their companies, in a sense, being involved in social issues. I'd also say, go ahead.
I was going to say having a social conscience. They want the companies to have a social conscience.
They do. That's very important to the younger generations. They want to see that. I think we also need to keep a line between the private sector and the public sector and recognize that they're different sectors, recognize that they have different purposes, and to also be careful when it comes to true politics. So there are, because there are people that have very different beliefs when it comes to a lot of policy issues. And in fact, what you mentioned was about, you know, like political spending. To punish a whole group of people in our political system is very dangerous in a sense. It can lead us to a one-party system instead of having diversity of thought and diversity in politics. too. We don't all think the same way. So I think that there needs to be a careful balance of all of those things, recognizing that there are things that the private sector can do to help the public, to help with some of these issues that we have. And, to talk through the lens of Larry Fink, he believes that, you know, there's a responsibility of the investment world to really look at these issues and to screen things. But I would also say, once again, we have to be very careful to, in a sense, punish a whole group of, let's just use energy as an example. I do believe energy, the traditional energy, is on the decline. But and that will happen over time, and we're going to see this America evolve, even with, especially with vehicles, right? So where we've been a gas guzzling nation, I think we're going to make that change. And you see a lot of talk about this goal of whether it's in the infrastructure plan of building the EV sites, all of those things. So I think, and you see companies like General Motors committed to this idea of also moving all of their vehicles to electric. So I think you have an interest from corporations, but what I would say is we need to be careful that we're not forcing people, in a sense, to all fall in one line. People can have diversity of thought.
As part of the letter that was published to the Financial Times, one of the things that the activists were seeking was the opposition of all white board of directors, which when you broke down the door for women on sitting on boards, or when you helped to do that, it was a positive movement forward. And it can, obviously, still a long way to go, but it continues. Are we going to be seeing that with people of color?
Yes, and absolutely. And I think you and I have talked about this issue of diversity on boards. It's not just men and women. It's, many kinds of diversity that needs to be sitting on corporate boards. And I've seen corporations moving that way, definitely. So I think the continued idea of diversity on boards will be beneficial for those companies.
Okay. Laureen Gilbert, the award-winning president and CEO of Wealthwise Financial Services, where can our listeners find you?
Wealthwisefinancial.com or 949-748-1177.
It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and always thank you so much for your thoughts. And for giving us the skinny, the lowdown, the way it should be said. Thank you, Laureen.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you. You as well. 820, it's the Mornings with Ed Show.